Chapter 29. Fire and Spirit. Pausing in the shade in front of the little tower, Nynaeve carefully dabbed at her face, then tucked the handkerchief back up her sleeve. Not that it did much good. Sweat popped out again right away, but she wanted to look her best inside. She wanted to look cool, serene, dignified. Small chance of that. Her temples were throbbing, and her stomach felt fragile. She had not been able to look at breakfast this morning. Just the heat, of course, but she wanted to go back to her bed, curl up, and die. To top it off, her weather sense was nagging at her. The molten sun should have been hidden by roiling black clouds and threatening bolts of lightning. The warders lounging out front did not look like guards at first glance, but they were. They reminded her of the Aiel she had seen in the Stone of Tyr. They probably looked like wolves even when asleep. A bald, square-faced man, no taller than she, but nearly as wide as he was tall, trotted out of the little tower and down the street, the hilt of the sword on his back thrusting up over his shoulder. Even he, Jory, bonded to Morvryn, managed it. Top-knotted Uno passed, threading his horse through the crowd and hardly seeming to acknowledge the heat, despite the steel plates and mail that covered him from the shoulders down. He twisted in his saddle to watch her with his good eye, and her face darkened. Birgitta had talked. Every time the man saw her, he was obviously waiting for her to ask him for horses. She was almost ready to. Even Elaine could not say they were doing any good. Well, she could and did, but she should not. Uno rode out of sight around a corner, and Nynaeve sighed. She was just trying to put off going inside. Mirella might be there. Blotting her face again, she frowned at her wrinkled hand. Today would be the 11th scrubbing pots, with 29 more to go. 29! And went in. It was slightly cooler in what had been the common room when the little tower was an inn, offering a little relief to her aching head. Everyone called it the waiting room now. No time had been wasted for repairs here. The fireplaces had stones missing, and lathing showed through holes in the plaster. Arena and Nicola were working brooms with another novice, but making little impression on the age-roughened floor. Arena wore a scowl, but then she was never pleased at having to do chores with the novices. No one went choreless in Salidar. At the far end of the room, Romanda was speaking with two slender, aged Aes Sedai. Their faces might be ageless, but their hair was white. Plainly new arrivals by the thin dust cloaks still hanging down their backs. No sign of Mirella, which brought a sigh of relief. The woman raked Nynaeve over the coals at every opportunity, then raked her the other way. Aes Sedai sat at tables, mismatched but carefully arranged in rows, working over parchments or issuing orders to warders and servants, but fewer than the first time she had seen the room. Only the sitters and their servants lived on the floors above now. Everyone else had been removed to make space for Aes Sedai to work in. The little tower had taken on attributes of the White Tower, the precise formality above all. When Nynaeve first saw this room, it had had a bustle about it, an air of something being done. A false air, then. Now it seemed almost slow, but it was the feel of the White Tower. Approaching one of the tables, not the nearest, she curtsied carefully. "Pardon, Aes Sedai, but I was told Swan and Lyanna are here. Could you tell me where to find them?" Brenda's pen stopped moving, and she looked up with cool, dark eyes. Nynaeve had chosen her instead of someone nearer the door because Brenda's was one of the few Aes Sedai who had never grilled her about Rand. Besides, once, when Swan was Ammerlin, Swan had chosen Brendas as one who could be trusted. That had nothing to do with this, but Nynaeve found small comforts where she could. "They are with some of the sitters, child." Brendas' voice was chimes, as emotionless as her pale face. White seldom showed emotion, but Brendas never showed any. Nynaeve stifled an irritated sigh. If sitters had them reporting on their eyes and ears, they might not be free for hours yet. Maybe not for the rest of the day. By then she would be head down among the pots. "Thank you, Aes Sedai." Brenda stopped her curtsy with a gesture. "Did Theodrin make any progress with you yesterday?" "No, Aes Sedai." If her voice was a bit tight, a touch curt, she had reason. Theodrin had said she meant to try everything, and apparently she really did mean everything. Yesterday's effort had involved sipping wine to relax her, only somehow Nynaeve had ended up taking more than just a few sips. She did not think she would ever forget being carried back to her room singing. Singing! Or remember without going red in the face. Brendas had to know. Everyone had to know. Nynaeve wanted to writhe. I only ask because your studies seem to be suffering. I've heard several sisters remark that you appear to have reached the end of your remarkable discoveries. Your extra chores might be the problem, but Elaine reveals something new every day, even with teaching her classes and working at the pots. A number of sisters are wondering whether they might not be able to help you more than Theodrin can. If we took it in turns, working you all day every day might prove more fruitful than these informal sessions with someone who is, after all, little more than accepted herself. It was all delivered in a level tone without the slightest accusation, yet Nynaeve's face heated as if she had been shouted at. I'm sure Theodrin will find the key any day, Aes Sedai, she almost whispered. I will try harder, Aes Sedai. Bobbing a hurried curtsy, she whirled around before Brendas could stop her again, with the result that she bumped into one of the two white-haired newcomers. They looked enough alike to be sisters in truth, almost mirror images of one another, with fine bones and long patrician faces. The bump was more of a brush, really, and she did try to apologize, but the Aes Sedai fixed her with a stare to do a hawk proud. Watch where you are going, accepted. In my day, an accepted who tried to trample Aes Sedai would have had hair whiter than mine by the time she finished scrubbing floors. The other touched her arm. Oh, do let the child go, Vandine. We have work to do. Vandine directed a sharp sniff at Nynaeve, but allowed herself to be led outside. Waiting a moment to let them leave, Nynaeve saw Shiriam come out of one of the meeting rooms with Mirella, Morvryn, and Beonin. Mirella saw her too and started in her direction, but only a step before Shiriam and Morvryn each put a hand on the Green Sister's arms and spoke quickly and softly, with many a glance at Nynaeve. Still talking, the four crossed the room and disappeared through another door. Nynaeve waited until she was back in front of the little tower before giving her braid a firm, deliberate tug. They had met the Wise Ones last night. Guessing why the others had stopped Mirella from speaking was easy enough. If Egwene had finally been there in the heart of the stone, she was not to be told. Nynaeve Almira was in disgrace. Nynaeve Almira was scrubbing pots like a novice when she might have been at least a step higher than accepted. Nynaeve Almira was getting nowhere with Theodrin, and all her marvelous discoveries had dried up. Nynaeve Almira would never be Aes Sedai. She had known it was a mistake to start funneling everything from Mogedion through Elaine. She had known it. Her tongue tried to curl up at the memory of a vile taste. Boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf. An antidote she had used on many a child who would not stop lying. All right, she had been the one to suggest it herself, but it was still a mistake. Aes Sedai were no longer talking about her innovations, they talked about the lack of them. Aes Sedai, who had never taken more than a passing interest in her block, were now caught up in how to break it down. She could not win. One way or another she was going to end up with Aes Sedai examining her from hair to toenails, sun up to sun down. She yanked harder on her braid, hard enough to hurt her scalp, and the way her head felt, that did nothing for her temper. A soldier in an archer's flat helmet and padded jerkin slowed to look at her curiously, but she gave him such a stare of refined malevolence that he stumbled over his own feet and quickly lost himself in the throng. Why did Elaine have to be so stubborn? A man's hands closed on her shoulders and she whirled about with words that would rip his head from his neck. They died on her tongue. Tom Marilyn grinned down at her through his long white mustaches, sharp blue eyes twinkling in his gnarled face. By the look of you, Nynaeve, I could almost think you were angry, but I know you have such a sweet disposition people ask you to dabble your fingers in their tea. Juelin Sandar was there beside him, the lean fellow looking carved from dark wood, leaning on his thumb-thick bamboo staff. Julin was Tyran, not Taraboner, but he still wore that ridiculous flat-topped conical red cap, even more battered than she had last seen it. He snatched it off when she glanced at him. Both men were dusty and travel-worn, their faces gaunt, though neither had been particularly fleshy to begin with. They looked as if they had spent the week since leaving Salidar sleeping in their clothes when they were not in the saddle. Before Nynaeve could open her mouth, they were hit by a human storm. Elaine flung herself at Tom so hard he staggered. He, of course, put his hands under her arms and hoisted her, whirling her around in a circle like a child despite his slight limp. He was laughing when he set her down again, and so was she. She reached up and tugged at one of his mustaches, and they fell to laughing even harder. He examined her hands, as wrinkled as Nynaeve's, asking what sort of trouble she had dived into without him to keep her on the straight and narrow, and she replied that she had no need of anyone to tell her what to do, only she spoiled it by blushing and giggling and biting her lip. Nynaeve took a deep breath. Sometimes the pair of them took playing at father and daughter entirely too far. Sometimes Elaine seemed to think she was about 10, and so did Tom. "I thought you had a novice class this morning, Elaine." The other woman glanced at her sideways, then gathered herself in an attempt at decorum that came too late, and set about straightening her banded dress. "I asked Kalindin to take it," she said casually. "I thought I might keep you company, and I'm glad I did," she added with a grin for Tom. "Now we can hear everything you learned in Amadicia." Nynaeve sniffed. Keep her company, indeed. She did not remember everything about yesterday, but she remembered Elaine laughing while getting her undressed and putting her to bed with the sun not yet all the way down. And she was sure she remembered the woman asking whether she wanted a bucket of water to cool her head. Tom noticed nothing. Most men were blind, though he was sharp enough usually. "We will have to be quick," he said. "Now Shiriam's drained us dry, she means to have us report to some of the sitters in person. Luckily it boils down well enough. There aren't enough white cloaks along the Eldar to keep a mouse from crossing if he had drums and trumpets to announce him a day ahead. Except for a strong force on the Tarabon border and the men he has trying to hold back the Prophet in the north, Nile seems to be gathering every last white cloak around Amadicia, and Aelron is pulling in his soldiers too. Talk of Salidar had started in the streets before we left, but if Nile has even thought about the place twice, I could not find a hint of it anywhere." "Tarabon," Julin muttered, studying his cap. "All ill country for anyone who doesn't know how to take care of herself, or so we heard." Nynaeve was not sure which of the two was best at dissembling, but she was sure either could lie to your face to make a wool merchant blue with envy. And right then she was sure they were hiding something. Elaine saw more than that. Gripping Tom's lapel, she peered up at him. "You heard something about Mother," she said calmly, and it was not a question. Tom knuckled his mustaches. "There are 100 rumors on every street in Amadicia, child, each wilder than the last." His gnarled, leathery face was pure innocence and openness, but the man had not been innocent the day he was born. "It's said the whole White Tower is here in Salidar with 10,000 warders ready to cross the Eldar. It's said Aes Sedai have captured Tanchico and Rand has wings he uses to fly around in the night, and—"
"Tom," Elaine said.
He snorted, glaring at Julin and Nynaeve as though this were their fault. "Child, it's just a rumor as crazed as any we heard. I could not confirm anything, and believe me, I tried. I meant not to mention it. It just stirs up your pain. Let it pass, child." "Tom." Much firmer. Shifting his feet, Julin looked as if he wished he were somewhere else. Tom just looked grim. "Well, if you must hear it. Everybody in Amadicia seems to think your mother is in the Fortress of the Light, that she's going to lead an army of white cloaks back to Andor."
Elaine shook her head, laughing softly.
"Oh, Tom, do you think I would worry over something like that? Mother would never go to the white cloaks. I could wish she had. I could wish she was alive to.
even though it violates everything she ever taught me, bringing foreign soldiers into Andor, and white cloaks, I could wish it. But if wishes were wings... Her smile was sad, but it was a muted sadness. I have done my grieving, Tom. Mother is dead, and I must do my best to be worthy of her. She would never have gone running after ridiculous rumors, or wept over them either.
Child, he said awkwardly.
Nynaeve wondered what, if anything, he himself felt about Morghese's death. Hard as it was to believe, he had been Morghese's lover once, when she was young, and Elaine little more than a babe. Back then he must not have looked as though he had been left to dry in the sun too long. Nynaeve knew little more of how or why it ended than that he had slipped out of Camelin with an arrest warrant at his heels. Not the mark of a love to be told in the stories. At the moment he certainly appeared concerned only with whether Elaine was telling the truth or hiding her hurt, with patting her shoulder and stroking her hair. If Nynaeve had not wished they would just once snap at one another like normal people, she would have thought it a pretty picture. A throat clearing broke up the vignette. "Master Merilyn," Tabitha said, spreading her white dress in a quick curtsy. "Master Sandor, Shiriam Sedai says the sitters are ready to receive you. She says you were not supposed to leave the Little Tower."
"The Little Tower, is it?" Tom said dryly, eyeing the former inn. "Elaine, they can't keep us forever. When we're done, you and I can discuss whatever you wish."
Motioning Tabitha to lead, he marched inside, his limp obvious, the way it was when he was tired. Julin squared his shoulders and followed as though walking to a gallows. He was Tyran, after all. Nynaeve and Elaine stood there, neither quite looking at the other. Finally, Nynaeve said, "I was not," at the same time that Elaine said, "I should not." They cut off together, and moments passed in fidgeting with skirts and blotting faces. "It is too hot to just stand here," Nynaeve said at last. It was unlikely that the sitters who were hearing Swan and Lyanna's reports would stop to hear Tom and Julin's. They split such things among them. That left Loghain, much as she wished it did not. She would not learn anything. But it was better than twiddling her thumbs until a dozen Aes Sedai descended on her with an hourly schedule. With a sigh, she started down the street. Elaine came along as though she had been invited. That helped Nynaeve find the anger she was going to need. Abruptly, she realized that Elaine's wrists were bare. "Where is the bracelet?" she asked softly. No one in the street would understand if they heard, but caution once forgotten could be forgotten once too often. "Where is Marigan?" "The bracelet is in my pouch, Nynaeve." Elaine stepped aside to let a high-wheeled cart pass, then joined Nynaeve again behind the cart. "Marigan is doing our laundry with about 20 other women around her, and groaning every time she moves. She said something she didn't think Birgitta would hear, and Birgitta..." "I had to take the thing off, Nynaeve. Birgitta had the right, and it hurt. I told Marigan to say she fell down some stairs." Nynaeve sniffed, but her heart was not in it. She had not been wearing the bracelet much of late, not because she could not hand over anything she dug out as her own. She was still sure Mogedion knew something about healing, even if she did not realize it herself. Nobody could be that blind. And there was the trick of detecting a man's channeling that Mogedion kept saying they almost had right. The truth of it was, she was afraid she might do far worse than Birgitta had, if she had any more contact with the woman than was absolutely necessary. Maybe it was the way satisfaction seemed to underlie everything else, even when Mogedion was groaning from the fed-back pain of Nynaeve trying to master that detection. Maybe it was remembering how afraid she had been, alone with the woman without the bracelet. Maybe growing disgust at keeping one of the Forsaken from judgment. Maybe some of all of it. What she did know was that she had to make herself put on the bracelet now, and that whenever she saw Mogedion's face, she wanted to pound it with her fists. "I should not have laughed," Elaine said. "I am sorry I did." Nynaeve stopped dead so suddenly that a horseman had to jerk his reins to keep from riding over her. He shouted something before the crowd carried him away, but shock muffled his words beyond hearing. not shock at the apology, at what she had to say. The right thing to say. The truth. Unable to look at Elaine, she started walking again.
You had every right to laugh.
She swallowed hard. I made a complete fool of myself. She had. A few sips, Theodrin said. A cup, and she emptied the pitcher. If you were going to fail, better to have some other reason than that you just could not do it. You should have sent for that bucket and dunked my head until I could recite the Great Hunt of the Horn without a mistake. She risked a glance from the corner of her eye. Small spots of color rested in Elaine's cheeks. So there had been mention of a bucket.
It could happen to anyone, the other woman said simply.
Nynaeve felt her own cheeks heating. When it had happened to Elaine, she had dunked the girl to wash away the wine.
You should have done whatever you needed to sober me.
It was quite the oddest argument Nynaeve could remember. With her insisting she had been a total fool and deserved whatever came of it, while Elaine made excuse after excuse for her. Nynaeve did not understand why it felt so refreshing, taking all the blame on herself that way. She could not recall ever doing that before, not without hedging as far as she was able. She very nearly got angry with Elaine for not agreeing that she had been a childish buffoon. It lasted until they reached the small thatched house on the edge of the village, where Loghain was kept.
If you don't stop this, Elaine said finally, I vow I'll send for a bucket of water right this instant.
Nynaeve opened her mouth, then closed it again. Even in this newfound euphoria of admitting she had been wrong, that was going too far. Feeling this good, she could not face Loghain. Feeling this good, it would be useless anyway, without Mogedion and the bracelet she definitely felt too fine to put on. She glanced at the two warders standing guard beside the stone-lintled door. They were not close enough to hear, but she still pitched her voice low. Elaine, let's go. Tonight. With Tom and Julin in Salidar, there was no need to ask Uno to find horses. Not to Camelin, if you don't want. To Ebudar. Merlilla will never find that bowl, and Shiriam will never let us go find it. What do you say? Tonight?
No, Nynaeve.
What good can we do Rand if they take us for runaways, which is what we'd be? You promised, Nynaeve. You promised if we found something.
I promised if we found something we could use. All we've found is this.
Nynaeve thrust her shriveled hands under the other woman's nose. The firmness slid from Elaine's face and her voice. She pursed her lips and studied the ground.
Nynaeve. You know, I told Birgitta we were staying. Well, it seems she told Uno that under no circumstances was he to provide you with a horse unless she said so. She told him you were thinking of running away. I didn't find out until it was too late.
Her head tossed irritably. If this is what having a warder is like, I don't know why anybody wants one. Nynaeve thought her eyes might burst from indignation. So that was why he had been staring at her. Euphoria vanished in a heat of, well, partly anger, partly humiliation. The man knew. He thought she... Wait. For a moment she frowned at Elaine, then decided not to voice the question that had come to mind. Was Nynaeve the only name Birgitta had mentioned to Uno? Or was Elaine perhaps included? Elaine had found herself quite an adopted family. In Tom... an indulgent father who wanted to teach her everything he knew, and in Birgitta, an older sister who thought it was her job to keep the younger from breaking her neck riding horses she could not handle yet. In that case, she said flatly, let's see what I can learn from Loghain. It was a small house, only two rooms, but thick stone walls made it relatively cool. Loghain was in his shirt sleeves, smoking a pipe and reading by a window. The Aes Sedai were taking good care of him. The chairs and tables were as fine as anything in Salidar, nothing elaborate, but well made, though nothing matched anything else, and a scroll-woven red and gold carpet covered much of a floor that was swept so clean, Nynaeve doubted he did the sweeping. He set his book down when they entered, seemingly not at all put out by the lack of a knock. Rising leisurely, he tapped out his pipe, donned his coat, and only then made a smooth leg.
"It is good to see you again after so long. I thought you had forgotten me. Will you join me in some wine? The Aes Sedai keep me on short supply, but what they do let me have is not bad at all."
The offer of wine would have been enough. Nynaeve barely suppressed a wince, if she had needed more. Thinking of Uno, the fact that he was male was enough. No need to pull up any of her anger from the little tower. Thinking of it added its bit, though. The true source was suddenly there, an unseen warmth just out of sight. She opened herself, and Saidar flooded her. If what she had felt earlier was euphoria, this was beyond ecstasy. She was surrendering to it. Burn Theodrin.
"Sit down," she told him coldly.
"I'll have no chatter out of you. Answer when you're spoken to, and otherwise hold your tongue."
Loghain only shrugged and complied, meek as a puppy. No, not meek. That smile was pure insolence. Part came from his feelings toward Aes Sedai. Nynaeve was certain. And part... He watched Elaine take another chair, arranging her skirts with a studied care, and even if Nynaeve had not seen what he was looking at, she would have known it was a woman. There was no smirking about it, no leering, just... Nynaeve did not know what, only that he directed the same at her, and she was suddenly very much aware that she was a woman and he a man. Maybe it was just that he was handsome and had broad shoulders, but she liked to think better of herself. Of course, that was not it. Clearing her throat, she wove filaments of Saidar into him, air and water, fire and earth, spirit, all the elements of healing, but used now to probe. It would have helped to lay her hands on him, but she could not bring herself to do that. Bad enough to touch him with the power. He was healthy as a bull, and almost as strong. Nothing wrong with him in the slightest, except for the hole. It was not really a hole, more a feeling that what seemed continuous was not, that what seemed smooth and straight was really skirting around an absence. She knew that sensation well from the early days, back when she thought she might really learn something. It still made her skin crawl. He looked up at her intently. She did not remember moving closer. His face was fixed in a mask of brazen contempt. She might not be Aes Sedai, but she was the next thing to it.
"How can you do all of that at once?" Elaine asked. "I could not keep track of half of it."
"Hush," Nynaeve murmured.
Hiding the effort required, she took Loghain's head in her hands roughly. Yes, it was better with physical contact, the impressions sharper. She directed the full flow of Saidar into where the hole should have been, and was almost surprised to find an emptiness. Of course, she still did not expect to learn anything. Men were as different from women in the power as they were in the flesh, maybe more so. She might as well study a rock to find out about fish. It was hard to keep her thoughts on what she was doing, knowing she was only going through motions, killing time, as it were. What is Mirella going to say? Would she keep back a message from Egwene? That emptiness, so small she could pass right over it, was vast once she slipped the flows inside, immense enough to swallow them all. If only I could talk to Egwene, I'll wager once she knows the tower is sending an embassy to Rand, and the Aes Sedai here are just sitting on their hands, she'll help me convince Elaine we've done all we can here. Vast emptiness. Nothingness. What about what she had found in Swan and Lyanna? The feel of something cut. She was sure it was real, however faint. Men and women might be different, but maybe... All I need to do is talk to her somehow. She'll see that Rand would be better off with us there. Elaine will listen to her. Elaine thinks Egwene knows Rand better than anybody else. There it was. Something cut. Just an impression, but the same as in Swan and Lyanna. So how do I find her? If only she'd pop into our dreams again. I'll bet I can talk her into joining us. The three of us would do much better with Rand. Together we could tell him what we learn in Telaran Riod. Keep him from making some wool-headed mistake with the Aes Sedai. She'll see that. Something about that cut. If it was bridged with fire and spirit, so...
It was the slight widening of Loghain's eyes that told her what she had done. Breath froze in her throat. She backed away from him so fast she stumbled over her skirt.
"Nynaeve," Elaine said, sitting up straight. What is the ma-? A heartbeat, and Nynaeve had all of Saidar she could hold redirected into a shield.
Go find Shiriam, she said hurriedly. Nobody else but Shiriam. Tell her...
She drew a deep breath that seemed like her first in hours. Her heart was speeding to beat galloping horses.
Tell her I've healed Loghain.